This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, talk of Russian nukes has loomed over the coverage.
As Russia's tanks rolled into Ukraine, Vladimir Putin made a threat not heard since the height of the Cold War.
Russia's response will be immediate and will lead you to such consequences never experienced in your history.
Then, days later, he raised the alert level of the world's largest nuclear arsenal. Only President Putin knows how far he would really go. In the meantime, it's a gamble that the West can't afford to take.
The New York Times this week reported about new spending priorities in Europe in response to the war. In it, the recently elected Romanian prime minister, a former battlefield general, expressed shock at how much the new world resembled the old. We never thought we'd need to go back and consider potassium iodide again, he said. And yet Romania will be spending millions for those pills to help block radiation poisoning should a nuke go off. But just how likely is the threat of nuclear war? Taking a closer look at Russia's nuclear weapon systems might temper some of those anxious narratives. Kristin Van Brusgaard studies Russian nuclear strategy as a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Oslo. Welcome to the show, Kristin.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Mikhail Zugar, who's the author of All the Kremlin's Men, described the, quote, collective Putin, that is to say, the echo chamber of yes men submissively validating Putin's ideas to the point where now he has really and truly come to believe that only he can save Russia. But is there any suggestion that this monolithic decision-making is happening with regard to nukes?
We do believe the Russian president alone cannot make a decision and issue an order to launch a nuclear weapon. We believe that there are three so-called nuclear suitcases in Russia, where one is with the president, but two others are with the defense minister and the chief of the general staff.
How does that compare to how it works in the U.S.?
The difference is that the decision in the American system lies with the president alone. And the decision in the Russian system lies with the president in consultation with either the defense minister or the chief of the general staff.
We know there has been tension with the defense minister.
Russian defense minister Sergei Shoigu filled different positions within the Russian government for almost two decades. In recent days and weeks, there has been speculation about this relationship between Minister Shoigu and President Putin. He has not been seen in public for some time. In connection with the relatively abysmal performance of the Russian military in Ukraine.
And then we have the chief of the general staff. I haven't heard much about how he stands. Putin only needs him. He doesn't need Shoigu.
Chief of the general staff, Gerasimov, is a military professional and has executed a number of military operations, including the military operation into Ukraine in 2014 and the annexation of Crimea and operations in Syria as well. But General Gerasimov and Shoigu as well, we don't know their personal preferences when it comes to nuclear weapons. We do, however, have some insights into the debates that have been going on within the general staff. Russian military theorists traditionally talk about different types of wars, and they typify these wars according to their scale and scope and intensity. And the type of war that we are seeing in Ukraine is one that Russian military planners would probably denote a local war, that is a limited war with a limited number of actors or states, and where the warring action takes place on the territory of those states. Nuclear weapons would not play a significant role in this type of war.
Let's talk about some of the actions that caused a tremendous amount of anxiety in the West, including a few days after Russia invaded, Putin ordering his military leaders to put Russian nuclear deterrent forces on a, quote, special regime of combat duty. This was reported in some papers as Putin threatening escalation of nuclear war by putting his weapons on alert. Officials in the U.S. didn't know exactly what it meant. What did it mean?
Russian officials actually came out afterwards to clarify this, perhaps in response to the Western confusion regarding what this meant, and said this means that we have increased the level of manning in the military units that contain strategic long-range nuclear forces that can reach targets, for example, in the United States. This was a signal to the West not to interfere. It was not a signal that Russia was considering using nuclear weapons, because the Russians know that that would be a suicidal act.
Nevertheless, a perception of a nuclear trigger-happy Putin isn't entirely speculative. Some of it comes directly from his own rhetoric on nuclear weapons, right?
There is significant reason for this speculation, in part because of the way that the military operation in Ukraine is evolving. The Russian leadership could turn increasingly desperate so as to reach to either nuclear weapons or other weapons of mass destruction. I mean, the potential for Russian chemical weapons use or even biological weapons use. There has also been the speculation about Putin's isolation, his rationality, the degree to which he is able to assess the costs and benefits of a certain action.
Based on what? The spectacles of his cabinet meetings?
Spectacles of his cabinet meetings, also the initial decision to launch this large invasion into Ukraine. I mean, that seemed like a totally irrational action that could not in any way produce the outcome that he seems to be interested in. But having said that, I think it's important to remember that there is a difference between a nuclear signaling and actual nuclear employment in the conflict in Ukraine. In the event that this war becomes a direct confrontation between Russia and NATO, I think that the potential or the likelihood for nuclear employment from the Russian side may increase dramatically. But then we are talking about an outright war between NATO and Russia, and where NATO, in fact, attacks targets on Russian territory. So this is a very different situation from the situation we have today.
On Russian territory. You see, this is a big question for me. NATO and the West in general see a no-fly zone, which would involve attacking and shooting down Russian aircraft, as crossing a potential red line. We don't know, though, what that red line is and whether it'll stay where it is.
The Russian leadership has talked about this no-fly zone as a potential red line as well, to warn the West against directly becoming involved in this conflict. But I think that that red line basically pertains to a direct confrontation between NATO and Russia actually materializing. That is not to say that a direct confrontation between NATO and Russia would immediately produce nuclear escalation. But the point is that at the moment that you have a direct confrontation, both sides may start considering taking actions to destroy or inhibit the military capabilities of the other side. For example, NATO strikes on Russian territory or Russian strikes on NATO territory. Mm. Then you have basically an outright war between NATO and Russia. And this is the type of situation where Russia starts talking about a threat to the very existence of its state. In those circumstances, they would consider responding with a nuclear weapon.
You've described what would trigger a nuclear attack, but we haven't entirely taken in his state of mind, the isolation. Recently declassified reports that suggest he's not being told the truth about how the war is going, about the impact of economic sanctions by his own staff. Is it possible he could make a decision that is utterly irrational?
the Russian president has had a tendency to brandish nuclear weapons to a much greater extent than his Western counterparts. But he too understands that crossing this threshold, breaking this taboo, would give him a historical legacy that he perhaps would not want. There is much speculation about how he's very preoccupied with his own historical legacy, how this may be one motivating factor for this invasion. Mm-hmm. So this is at least one potential consolation.
I'm just wondering, how can media outlets more accurately report what's going on? You've observed that in many ways, Western media is just like Russian media, maybe prone to a more sensationalistic approach to reporting on these issues than is warranted.
One example of this is this interview with Putin's press spokesman, where he was pushed very hard by an American journalist whether he could rule out the potential of nuclear weapons use. And he hesitated and responded that Russia would use nuclear weapons only if the existence of the state was under threat. So basically his response was just reaffirming what has been long-standing Russian doctrine and policy. But because of the current context, that produces, you know, headlines about how Russia refuses to reject the scenario of nuclear weapons use, when, you know, another headline to that story could just be that Russia reaffirms its long-standing nuclear policy.
As someone who thinks about nuclear strategy for a living, how do you navigate the existential fear of nuclear war?
You know, you almost have some kind of technical approach to several of these existential issues. But then, of course, at times and sometimes even regularly, you stop and you start considering the repercussions and implications. And, you know, you get gripped by an existential fear that is warranted when you talk about a potential nuclear Armageddon. You can find some consolation in the notion that the states that do have nuclear weapons, as far as I can understand, most nuclear weapons states have those weapons precisely in order not ever to have to use them.
Kristen, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kristen Van Brugsgaard wrote Understanding Putin's Nuclear Decision-Making for the security blog War on the Rocks. Coming up, the emotional arc of nuclear fears. This is On the Media.